There is another exceptional and principal benefit of detachment from joy in creatures, which is a preparatory condition for all the favors God will grant to the soul, and without which he does not bestow them. It is freedom of the heart for God. The favors are such that for each joy the soul renounces out of love of God and evangelical perfection, it will receive 100-fold in this life as promised in the Gospel, Matthew 19:29 and Mark 10:30. But even if such gains were not to be had, the spiritual person would have to quell these joys because they displease God. In the Gospel, we mark that merely because the rich man rejoiced for having stored up goods for many years, God was so angered that he told him he must give an account of his soul that very night. Luke 12:20. We should believe, therefore, that as often as we rejoice vainly, God is watching and planning some chastisement and bitter drink according to our merits. For at times the sadness redounding from the joy is 100 times greater than the joy. What St. John says of Babylon in the Apocalypse is true. She would receive torment in the measure in which she rejoiced and lived in delights. The Apocalypse 18:7. Yet the text does not mean that the sadness will not be greater than the joy. It shall be greater, since eternal torments are inflicted for brief pleasures. But it indicates that no fault will escape a particular punishment. For he who will punish this idle word shall not pardon vain joy. Chapter 21 of Book 3. By natural goods we mean beauty, grace, elegance, bodily constitution, and all other corporal endowments. Also in the soul, good intelligence, discretion, and other talents pertinent to the national part of man, the rational part of man. A person is vain and deceitful if he rejoices in these gifts only because he or his relatives have them, without giving thanks to God who grants them, in order to be better known and loved. As Solomon says, grace is deceitful and beauty vain. She that fears the Lord will be praised. Proverbs 31:30. We are taught in this text that a man should rather have misgivings about these natural gifts, since he can readily be distracted from the love of God through them and fall into vanity and delusion because of their allurement. This is why he says that bodily grace is deceptive, deludes man along the way, and attracts him to inappropriate things through vain joy and complacency with self, or with the possessions of this grace. And he declares that beauty is vain because it causes the man who esteems and rejoices in it to fall in countless ways. His only norm of joy should be whether or not he serves God through it. He ought rather to be diffident and fearful lest his natural gifts and graces occasion his offending God, in which he would turn his eyes toward them in vain presumption or inordinate attachment. Whoever has these endowments should be careful and live cautiously, lest through vain ostentation he be the occasion that someone withdrew his heart one iota from God. These natural graces and gifts are such a provocation and occasion both to the possessor and the beholder that there is scarcely a heart that escapes from this snare or birdline. We have known many spiritual persons with these endowments who have prayed God to disfigure them, in fear lest they be an occasion to themselves or others of some vain joy or attachment. The spiritual man, then, must purge and darken his will of this vain joy, and bear in mind the following. Beauty and all other natural endowments are but earth, arising from the earth and returning to it. Grace and elegance are but the smoke and air of this earth, and we should be considered and valued as such for the sake of avoiding a lapse into vanity. In these goods, he must direct his heart to God in joy and gladness that God is himself, all these beauties and graces, eminently and infinitely above all creatures. And as David affirms, all these will grow old and pass away like a garment, while God alone will remain immutable forever. Psalm 100. Accordingly, if a man does not turn his joy to God in all things, it will always be false and illusory. This is the kind Solomon referred to when he spoke to joy in creatures. To joy I said, why do you let yourself be deceived in vain? Ecclesiastes 2:2. That is, when the heart is allowed to be allured by creatures. Chapter 22 of Book 3. A good deal of the harm, as well as the benefit I am describing in each of these kinds of joy, is common to them all, because this harm or benefit is the direct result of either joy or detachment from it. No matter what class the joy belongs to, I am mentioning this harm and benefit in each of these categories, since, as I say, the harm or advantage is annexed to all these kinds of joy. My main intention, however, is to speak of the particular kinds of harm and benefit arising in the soul by rejoicing or not rejoicing in each of these goods. I refer to them as particular because they are the primary and immediate result of a particular kind of joy. They are only caused by other kinds secondarily and immediately. For example, tepidity of spirit is the outcome of each and every kind of joy, and so this harm is common to all six. Yet fornication is a particular evil that follows directly only from joy in natural goods, of which we are now speaking. The spiritual and bodily harm directly and effectively ensuing from joy in natural goods can be reduced to six principal kinds. The first is vainglory, presumption, pride, and disesteem of neighbor. A person cannot fasten the eyes of esteem upon one object without withdrawing them from others. The result is at least a material disesteem of other things, for when the heart values one thing naturally, it turns from others on account of its concentration upon the esteemed object. And through this material contempt, it is exceptionally easy in a general or particular way to slip into intentional and voluntary contempt for some of these other things. Such contempt may be internal or may manifest itself externally through speech. This thing is not like that, or so and so is not like this person. The second harm is the incitement of the senses to complacency, sensual delight, and lust. The third kind of harm is that it induces flattery and vain praises, which involves deception and vanity, as Isaiah warns, "My people, whoever praises you deceives you." Isaiah 3:12. The reason is that even though the truth is told by lauding natural grace and beauty, this praise rarely fails to contain some harm, either by causing the person praised to fall into vain complacency and joy, or by directing one's own imperfect affections and intentions toward the person endowed with this beauty. The fourth kind of harm is general, for the reason and judgment of the spirit becomes very dull, as in the case of joy over temporal goods, and in some ways even duller. Since natural goods are more intimate to a man than temporal goods, joy in them produces this imprint more quickly and effectively, and ravishes more forcibly. Thus the reason and judgment do not remain free, but are clouded by that emotion of very intimate joy. This gives rise to the fifth harm, distraction of the mind with creatures. The next outgrowth is spiritual lukewarmness and weakness. This sixth harm is also general and usually reaches such a point that it causes the soul to find extreme tedium and sadness in the things of God, even to the extent of abhorring them. Pure spirit is infallibly lost in this kind of joy, at least in the beginning. If some spirituality is felt, it will be very sensible, gross, unspiritual, exterior, and unrecollected. It will comprise the sensory pleasure more than the strength of spirit. The spirit is lowly and weak, that it does not suppress the habit of this joy, for the possession of this imperfect habit is sufficient to impede pure spirit. Even though the acts of joy are not consented to, consequently the soul lives more in the weakness of the senses than in strength of spirit. If it does not, it will notice the perfection and strength it has when occasions arise. Though I do not deny that many virtues can coexist with many imperfections, yet due to the reign of the flesh which militates against the spirit, Galatians 5:17, there can be neither a pure nor a savorous interior spirit dwelling together with these unquelled joys. And even if the spirit is unaware of any harm, distraction at least is secretly caused. Let us then go back to the second kind of harm, which contains in itself innumerable other indescribable kinds. The extent and enormity of the disaster arising from joy in natural graces and beauty is patent, since on account of this joy we hear every day of many murders, lost reputations, insults, squandered fortunes, rivalries, quarrels, and of so many adulteries, rapes, and fornications, and of fallen saints so numerous that they are compared to the third part of the stars of heaven, cast down to earth by the tail of the serpent. Revelations 12:4. To the fine gold which has lost its beauty and lustre in the mire, and to the illustrious and noble men of Zion, clothed with the best gold, yet esteemed as broken clay jars. Lamentations 4:1-2. Where does this poisonous harm fail to reach? And who fails to drink little or much from the golden chalice of the Babylonian woman of the Apocalypse? Apocalypse 17:4. By the fact that she is seated on that large beast with the seven heads and 10 crowns, it is signified there is hardly anyone of high rank or low, saint or sinner, who does not drink of her wine, subjecting his heart somewhat. For as is pointed out there, all the kings of the earth were inebriated with the wine of her prostitution. Apocalypse 17:2. She reaches out to all states, even to the supreme and illustrious state of the sanctuary and divine priesthood, by setting her abominable cup in the holy place, as Daniel asserts. Daniel 9:27. And she hardly leaves a strong man who has not drunk a small or large quantity of wine from her chalice, which is this kind of vain joy. As a result, it is said that all the kings of the earth were inebriated by this wine. Since so few will be found, no matter how holy, who have not been somewhat ravished and perplexed by this drink of joy and pleasure in natural beauty and graces. It is worth remarking that the text says they were inebriated. No matter how little is the amount of this wine of joy, it immediately takes a hold on the heart and subdues the heart, producing obscurity in the reason, as happens with those who get drunk from wine. If some antidote is not taken immediately, the life of the soul will be in danger. For spiritual weakness will augment and bring such evil upon the soul that it will find itself grinding at the mill, a captive of its enemies. Like Samson, with his eyes plucked out and the hair of his first strength cut. And afterwards it will perhaps die the second death, as he did together with his enemies. This is the harm the drink of this joy will cause spiritually, as it did physically to Samson, and as it does to many today. The enemies of the soul will come and say to it afterwards what the Philistines said to Samson, to his great confusion. Were you not the one who broke the knotted cords, broke the jaws of the lions, killed the 1,000 Philistines, pulled out the gates and freed yourself from all your enemies? Let us conclude then with necessary instructions for the prevention of this poison. As soon as the heart feels drawn by vain joy in natural goods, it should recall how dangerous and pernicious it is to rejoice in anything other than the service of God. One should consider how harmful it was for the angels to have rejoiced and grown complacent in their natural beauty and goods, since they thereby fell into the ugly abyss, and how many evils come upon man every day because of this very vanity. Therefore, one should take courage and use in time the remedy the poet suggests for those beginning to become attached to this joy. Hurry now in the beginning to apply the remedy, for when evils have had time to increase in the heart, medicine and remedies arrive late. Look not at wine, warns the wise man, when its color is scarlet and it shines in the glass. It enters smoothly, but bites like a snake and spreads poison like the basilisk. Chapter 23 of Book 3. Many are the benefits derived through withdrawal of the heart from this joy, besides preparing the soul for the joy and the love of God and for other virtues. It directly paves the way for humility toward self and general charity toward one's neighbor. In remaining unattached to everyone in spite of these apparent and deceptive natural goods, a person is unencumbered and free to love all nationally, all rationally, and spiritually, which is the way God wants him to love. As a result, he realizes that nobody merits love except for his virtues. And when he loves with this motive, his love is according to God and exceedingly free. If the love contains some attachment, there is greater attachment to God. For as the love of neighbor increases the love of God, increases and vice versa. For that which proceeds from God has one and the same reason and cause. Another excellent benefit coming from the denial of this kind of joy is the fulfillment of the counsel our Lord gives in the Gospel of St. Matthew, that whoever would follow him should deny himself. Matthew 16:24. In no way could a person do this if he were to rejoice in his natural goods, because whoever pays some attention to self does not deny himself or follow Christ.